Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the IBI Group first quarter earnings conference call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. If at any time during the conference you need to reach an operator, you may press the star followed by the 0. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded today, Thursday, May 10, 2018. I would now like to turn the conference over to Scott Stewart, Chief Executive Officer for IBI Group. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good morning, and thank you for joining us for our first quarter earnings conference call. Our Q1 earnings were released yesterday afternoon and have been posted on the website for your reference. Joining me on the call this morning is our Chief Financial Officer, Stephen Taylor. Prior to commencing the call, I will ask Stephen to read the following disclaimer about forward-looking statements. Stephen.
Thank you, Scott. On behalf of IBI Group, I'm required to note that some of our statements made on today's call might contain forward-looking information. We caution listeners not to place undue reliance on our forward-looking statements, since a number of factors could cause the actual future results to differ materially from the targets and expectations expressed. The company undertakes no obligation to update or revise any forward-looking statement, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise, unless expressly required by applicable securities laws. For further information on risk factors, please view the company's annual information form filed with the Canadian Securities Regulatory Authorities. I'll now turn the call back to Scott.
Thanks, Stephen. IBI Group's first quarter for 2018 laid a foundation for our company to build upon this year. We saw an increase in income, cash flow, and had material improvement in our debt reduction. In yesterday's announcement, management did note that our net revenue decreased slightly by 0.7% to $90.8 million this quarter. This was driven primarily by foreign exchange and a decrease in U.S. operational results. Work continues on pivoting the company to become a technology-driven design firm. Further information will be presented on this at our annual general meeting later this morning. As for performance by region, in Eastern Canada, work continued on a number of LRT projects in Toronto and Ottawa. We've also been immersed in the bidding for a number of major infrastructure projects, which has consumed resources and limited the revenue growth and results. We continue to see strong performance in our mixed-use high-rise with a number of recent projects, including an 83-story tower in Toronto, 5 towers in Montreal, and other towers across Ontario, including Windsor. We continue to work with our traditional development clients as they look to broaden their base outside of Toronto and into other market areas in Canada, the United States, and beyond. In Western Canada, work continues on transit projects in Calgary and Edmonton. We are also seeing strengthening performance in Edmonton and Fort McMurray, while Calgary continues to recover, but at a slower pace. Our Vancouver buildings practice has also had recent success in healthcare, and our mixed-use high-rise practice in Vancouver is also very strong, and we are working with Vancouver clients on selected markets in the United States. Revenue in the United States decreased by 16% for the quarter compared to the same period in 2017. We have taken steps to reverse the trend, including putting in place a new corporate structure and new leadership team. We are focusing on those geographies and sectors that are more aligned with the core business of IBI, including education and mixed-use high-rise development along the West Coast, Texas, and North Carolina. Across the United States, we are seeing a significant uptick in opportunities in transportation management, transit systems, and traveler information projects. We have achieved wins in the delivery of 511 traveler information services in Florida and California, and in intelligent transportation systems planning in Southern California. In addition, there is a growing interest in smart cities in the United States, an area where IBI is uniquely positioned. In the UK, revenue is up 6% for the quarter. While the buildings and infrastructure practice was stable, the intelligence practice grew with continuing work in Scotland. Good weather also allowed for a strong start in our highways, surveying, and inventory practice in England. We are continuing with actions to diversify the business in the UK and using UK talent to support other regions in areas of healthcare and transportation infrastructure. Our other international businesses grew by over 300% in the first quarter relative to 2017. This growth was fueled by continuing work in India in the area of smart cities, as well as the installation of toll and traffic management systems. The Middle East remains a strong market for the company, with significant transportation and land planning work in Dubai and Saudi Arabia. In Israel, our work continues on the Red Line LRT project, a transformative transportation project in Tel Aviv. Management is forecasting approximately $361 million in total revenue in 2018. We currently have $335 million committed and under contract for the next 5 years and approximately 11 months of backlog. Throughout the course of the year, we will continue to look for ways to further increase work commitments and improve profitability. We also remain focused on setting the company up for the long-term success. Later today at our annual general meeting of shareholders, we will be announcing the full details of our company's transition to a technology-driven design firm. These changes will ensure IBI's use of technology that are at the forefront of everything we do, including planning, design, operations of cities, and infrastructure. We encourage everyone on this call who can't attend the meeting in person to watch the live video stream today at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. A link can be found in yesterday's earnings release. With technology changing at such a rapid pace, we believe the offerings we'll discuss at the meeting will help set IBI apart from our competitors, delivering better results for our clients and position the company as a technology-driven design firm. We hope you'll tune in. I'll now turn it over to Stephen to discuss the financial highlights.
Thank you, Scott. This quarter, the company had net income of $7.6 million, compared with $3.9 million for the same period in 2017. This 95% increase in net profit is inclusive of a gain in the fair value of other financial liabilities of $4.1 million, compared to a loss of $300,000 in the same period in 2017, and foreign exchange losses of $600,000 compared with foreign exchange gains of $100,000 for the same period in 2017. Net revenue decreased to $90.8 million this quarter compared to $91.4 million for the same period in 2017, the result of movements in foreign exchange and a decrease in U.S. operational results. Adjusted EBITDA was $9.1 million, or 10.1% of revenue for the quarter. This compares to $10.2 million in 2017. Adjusted EBITDA from operations was similar to 2017, but the impact of cash outflows, of $1 million related to the onerous lease on property we still hold in Montreal. The company finalized sublease agreements for this onerous lease in quarter four of 2017. At that time, there was an increase in rent expense, which was recognized as part of net earnings, but did not impact adjusted net EBITDA for the quarter. For quarter one of this year and subsequent quarters, outflows related to this lease have the opposite effect, with no impact on net earnings, but a reduction to adjusted EBITDA for the quarter. For the quarter, basic and diluted earnings per share were 20 cents per share compared to basic and diluted earnings of 10 cents per share for the same period in 2017. The increase was primarily due to an increase in net income of $3.7 million, which was slightly offset by an increase in weighted average number of common shares outstanding. The increase in the number of shares is the result of exercise of deferred share units and exercise of stock options. Cash flows from operating activities for the quarter end were $3.5 million, an increase of 52% compared to $2.3 million for the same period in 2017. The increase is mainly attributable to cash from non-cash operating working capital of $2.2 million, offset by an increase in income taxes paid of $1 million when compared to the same period in 2017. Interest expense decreased this quarter to $2.5 million compared to $2.7 million for the same period in 2017. The interest expense decreased by $200,000 primarily due to lower average outstanding credit facility balances compared to the first quarter of 2017. This reduction was slightly offset by an increase in the Canadian prime rate. And finally, days sales outstanding were 71 days as at March 31, 2018, a decrease of 3 days compared to the first quarter of 2017. I'll now turn things back over to Scott.
Thanks, Stephen. Operator, we are now ready to take questions and will respond as appropriate.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been asked by another and you would like to withdraw your registration, you may press the 1 followed by the 3. If using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before entering your request. Once again, it's the 1 followed by the 4 to register a question. Our first question comes from the line of Mona Mazir with Laurentian Bank in Montreal, Quebec. Please proceed.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my questions.
Hi, Mona.
Hi.
Hi.
So my first question just has to do with the U.S., and I'm just wondering if you could discuss the drag or negative margins there. I mean, we've been seeing some deterioration for some time, but I'm wondering if you could discuss exactly, you know, what the causes are. Is it largely project management? Because I know you had spoken about replacing some of the leadership there. Is it certain geographies and verticals? And I know we're early into Q2, but how have kind of the turnaround efforts been going? Thanks.
There are a couple of main areas of challenge that we have encountered. The first, which accounts for a very significant part of the forecast or our decrease, is a cancellation of a major contract, which was in the industrial sector. We had a signed-up contract, and we were well into the work, and it was canceled the second week of January. So that had an impact on the results, naturally. We're also seeing that there was a significant drop-off in our buildings practice on the West Coast. There was just a fall-off from last year, and we have taken steps now to put the right people in place so that that won't happen again and that we will have a stable business in those areas or in education going forward. And then, of less significance but still important, there are a couple of other offices that have been a drag for some time, and we have put in place a plan to correct that and make sure that it doesn't occur again, and that is in areas of the western part of the United States as well as a couple of offices on the east. So plans are in place, we are taking action, and we should be able to the plan is to get back to a more normal status by in the next quarter and start to see a real turnaround by the end of the year.
Okay. And just that canceled infrastructure contract, industrial contract that you alluded to?
It was a buildings contract, yes.
It was a buildings contract that was canceled the second week of January. Would that be a drag on Q2 and Q3 as well?
Not with the action that we're taking, but it's reflected in the guidance for overall revenue that we are taking action to right size the capacity for that operation.
Okay. And then just keeping on margins, but turning to the other international segment margins, we saw significant swings, you know, 36% this quarter versus last year. I'm just wondering if you could speak to the dynamics of the work that you're doing there and what would be a good run rate to think about?
Well, our past experience in those projects in the other international jurisdictions is that we have very strong EBITDA margins in most of the places that we're doing business. We have seen a significant uptick in India. Business is this quarter compared to the same quarter last year is up roughly 50%. That is just the result of product development and marketing efforts in past that are really starting to pay off. And as I think we'd mentioned to you before, our staff headcount has grown by over 50% in the last year in India. So that's a strong area of growth for us. The same is true in Dubai and in Saudi Arabia. And although our overall revenues in the other international are small compared to the rest of the corporation, they are growing, and there can be swings in from quarter to quarter in those jurisdictions, largely because a lot of the projects are milestone-based, and so I think that this has been an extremely good quarter for us in this particular sector of the business. I think if you looked at the overall margins that we achieved last year, over the entire year for other international, that would be a better indicator, and it would not be as high as this particular quarter. It would be probably 50% of the margin that we experienced in this quarter. It was a very strong quarter for us in other international.
Just a further comment on India that is noteworthy in that we don't use India as a back office production site, but a lot of what those results are the operation in India just being very effective in the Indian market, creating new solutions and new ideas with a much heavier emphasis on technology. And it's a very agile operation that adjusts to client needs and gets out in front of that. And so it's not only that it's good in India, but it's also we're developing solutions out of India that we're then taking across the firm because of the success in India.
Okay, perfect. And just lastly for me here is that looking at your 2018 guidance, it's now flat year over year at about $360 million. But when I hear you guys, on this call and even in discussions, your comments about the various end markets, even the U.S., U.K., Canada, seem fairly optimistic when you're speaking about spending initiatives and outlook. Is the guidance being conservative, or is your focus really on turning around the U.S. and U.K. margins, and is that the primary area of focus for you? Thanks.
Well, we tend to be conservative generally, but certainly the focus is on, with particular emphasis on the U.S., a 16% drop in revenue is not acceptable, and it is garnering a lot of attention of senior management. We have to turn that around. It's a strong market, and in fact, what we're experiencing is the exact opposite of our expectations. So it will garner a lot of attention for management for the year. But I wouldn't say that there's anything that we're hiding in the way of a rosy outcome. We forecast conservatively, and we think that the 361 is a reasonable outcome for the year.
Okay, thank you. That's it for me.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Frederic Bastien with Raymond James in Vancouver, British Columbia. Please proceed.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to build on Mona's questions here. I do welcome the new segment disclosure. I think it's very helpful to our analysis of the company's performance, so thanks for that. Based on your prepared comments, I wasn't surprised to see sort of the profitability of Canadian and U.S. operations down and that of the international business up. That said, I was a bit surprised to see the swing of the profitability. You did touch on that earlier, but was there anything more to that? And I was just wondering, did Q1, because it's the first quarter of the year, did that skew any of the results at all?
I don't, other than the comment that others have made that there was sort of one day less revenue in Q1 than the comparable period last year, I think No, not really. I think you need to sort of focus in on what we had said in the prepared comments that we were doing a lot of work, particularly in Eastern Canada, on bid work for some of the large P3s that are coming up for award. Those tend to be fairly low margin efforts. We don't really do that well on that work until we win the project. So we're making an investment there. I think we also continue to make investments in the new technology initiatives that a similar quantum to that we've spoken about in past quarters. So the first quarter was really more of an investment time for IBI to try and build for the future rather than other than in the United States where the contract that Scott talked about caused us problems. It really was not a reflection of any other serious issues in the business.
Okay, and then to the extent that you made those investments in Canada and you're dealing with the issues in the U.S., we should expect significantly improved results from those two businesses as we go forward. And to your comment, maybe a little less profitably from the international business. So overall, just a smoother next few quarters, basically.
Yeah, and I think at the end of the day, we're still, we have said that we would be coming in once again, saying margins 8-12%. I think we're still suggesting that our margins will be consistent with past periods, based on the 361 revenue level.
Great. Just curious, is your intelligent practice? Doesn't look like it's split out separately, but how does it look from a segmented perspective? How is it concentrated?
It's we have it spread quite significantly. We have a major intelligence practice here in Canada, centered more out of Toronto, where we do a lot of development work, software development and systems deployment. We have in the U.S. we have both the consulting intelligence skills as well as software and systems development in Florida, Boston, and Seattle, as well as San Diego. Internationally, we have our second largest systems development team is in Glasgow, supporting work both in Scotland as well as in England. And then we have a very significant part of the practice in India that is doing development work there, both in areas such as smart cities, but also in advancing technology and systems in areas of tolling and traffic management. So it's spread quite widely.
Okay. Last question for me. You had some charges, or at least an expense related to the office lease. Would you mind just walking me through this again? Still grappling with the definition and the explanation that you had in the press release.
So this lease is on a property that we have been dealing with since we divested of our Quebec operations in 2014. It was when we sold the business there, the acquirer didn't want to take on this property. We had only just started a 10-year lease term. And so this is a problem that we've had to find a solution for over a fairly long period of time. We entered into a very desirable sublease arrangement with a good tenant to take over the property. That lease was signed in Q4 of last year. As of the end of last year, we had a total provision for this onerous lease on the books of $5.3 million. So having said that we got a good tenant, it was a big financial obligation, and there will be, over the life of the lease, a shortfall, we believe, in the vicinity of this $5.3 million, of which approximately $3 million will be spent this year, during 2018, as the new tenant comes in and takes over, and we have to pay some transitional costs to move them into the facility. So the $1 million expense that $1 million increase in expense in cash expense in the first quarter of 2018 was largely the result of some fees and commissions we had to pay on the transition that it was anticipated they would be paid on a more uniform basis over the year, but they did come through in Q1, and so I would not expect that in the last two quarters of the year that our cash expense will be anywhere near that level, but it may be for Q2 of this year, totaling about $3 million for the year.
Okay, and why did you choose to actually include it in your adjusted numbers rather than exclude it?
Well, I guess it has to be in terms of we have said that our adjusted EBITDA follows the same definition that we use in terms of our banking agreement. Any non-cash expense on an onerous lease of this type is not included in the calculation of it. It's added back in the calculation of adjusted EBITDA in periods where we're not laying out the cash, but when we start to pay the cash, then it becomes a deduction from adjusted EBITDA, and so we're just following the accounting rules the way we have to.
Okay. All right. That's helpful. Thank you. I'll turn it over. Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Michael Tupholm with TD Securities in Toronto, Ontario. Please proceed.
Thanks. Last quarter, you had suggested that you thought on a year-over-year basis you could hold adjusted EBITDA margins for the full year of 2018, but stable relative to 2017. So I think last year you did about an 11.2% adjusted EBITDA margin. Are you still comfortable with that guidance?
I think we'll be in that ballpark, Mike.
Okay. And, I mean, I guess similar to or along the lines of what Fred had just asked there, your definition would exclude any impact from these cash payments associated with the onerous lease. So last year there was no impact on adjusted EBITDA from that situation, correct?
Not entirely true. Last year, we were paying out on this. Our cash outflow was about $260,000 a quarter on this lease. So if you go back and look at the chart in our MD&A where we reconcile the EBITDA and adjusted EBITDA, you'll find for the first three quarters, you'll see the $260,000 cash outflow. The number presented in Q4 was what we ended up providing on the P&L net of that $260,000. So it was in there for last year, just
okay.
In a smaller quantum.
Okay, fair enough. And just secondly, the Canadian business revenues contracted slightly on a year-over-year basis, were essentially flat if you adjust for the one fewer working day as compared to last year. Can you just talk about how we should be thinking about organic growth in the Canadian business going forward? I know, you know, some of the larger jobs you were pursuing on the infrastructure transportation side, you know, there was still maybe a little bit of time until some of that might come through. But how do we think about organic growth in that segment?
In infrastructure or across the business?
For the Canadian segment.
Yeah.
Well, really across Canada, but I know the infrastructure piece has been historically, at least in the last year or so, an important driver. But overall, I guess, for Canada, organic growth.
Overall, if we look at the buildings sector, so much of that is driven by, or at least their mixed-use high-rise, is driven by demand for housing. A lot of that is driven by immigration, and we're still seeing 350,000 people a year coming into the country, and there's a national commitment to that for the next number of years. And most of that immigration settles in the major cities, Vancouver, Toronto, Calgary, and now Montreal. But what we are starting to see is there's a migration out of the bigger cities into some of the secondary areas, such as Windsor or even the Hamilton and such. So we see that as being continuing. We see that with that comes all of the other associated needs related to healthcare, schools, and such. So I would say that on the building side, so long as we don't have a major financial impact from interest rate changes, drastic interest rate changes, that will stay. The big infrastructure work that we are involved with, the P3s, tends to be a bit lumpy. We were not successful in Montreal on the RER. There are still some significant projects that are in the pipeline in Canada, including here Ontario and Hamilton, and then a little further out, Edmonton, as well as then in British Columbia, and a couple of new lines that are pending. And then the Confederation line in Ottawa. They tend to be lumpy. If you win, you win big, and if you lose, well, you look for other opportunities. So we are hopeful on the infrastructure side. On the big P3 projects, we have certainly been successful in at least our share, if not more than our share in the past. The other major infrastructure area of opportunity is with Metrolinx, and they have some major projects coming out in the RER area as well, with the electrification of the rail lines. So there's a lot of potential spend taking place in Canada that we should benefit by. We are seeing and hearing more about the federal government maybe holding off a bit, because one of the big issues, especially in Toronto, is that the cost of construction is going up because there is such a demand both for the infrastructure, such as Eglinton and Viva, but also the construction and the private sector development work that's going on. So it's almost being purposely held off a bit until prices come down a bit. So we would hope that the federal government initiatives would be delayed a bit to be able to fill in any downturn that might arise in the infrastructure area. So we still feel very positive about the urban environment market, both in terms of buildings but also in terms of infrastructure.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. I am showing no further questions at this time.
Very good. Well, thank you, everyone. Thank you for your questions, and thank you for joining us this morning. I do want to offer a quick reminder that IBI's AGM will be starting at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, where we will be providing fuller details surrounding our company's evolution to be a technology-driven design firm. A link to the live stream will be found on last night's press release. Thank you again, and have a good day.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. That does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your line.